Okay, so why worry? That's a really easy question, because you can probably think of a million things that make you worry. But actually, the better question and the answer to how we should deal with it is, what should we do when we worry? Because none of us like it, okay? It's uncomfortable to worry. So what should we do? Well, fortunately, Matthew's Gospel gives us a really good clue. And one thing we can do about worry, before we get into the Matthew section, is we can laugh about it. Okay? This might make you worry. Okay? It's a little truck with some portaloos on the back. Okay? And it's heading for a bridge which is too low. Okay? This is not going to end well, is it? Okay? You would worry if you were in the convertible without the roof in the car behind. Okay, so we can laugh about worry. But although that is pretty gross and possibly staged, actually it's not the sort of thing that we would worry about normally. In here, in the background, there are lots of things which we and the world and people we know worry about. So the future, family, money, bills, house, past, relationships, job, career. They're all in there, and we could make a huge list of the things that worry us. And you don't need me to tell you what you worry about. I know what I worry about. Probably different to you. Definitely different. But we do worry. And we can't laugh it off. Although children's books, they make light of it. And you will hear people say to you, oh, the solution to worry is very simple. Just be happy. Oh, yeah, that's going to work. I mean, the reason you're worried is because something serious, you think, is going to happen. And so, the notion that, oh, yeah, it'll be just be happy, well, that is just fallacious rubbish. Okay? That does not work. Here's an alternate. Worry dolls. So these apparently originate in Guatemala, and they're tiny. And what you do, supposedly, is you put it under your pillow at night, and the doll worries for you. So when you wake up, the doll's done the worrying, so you don't have to. Yeah, kind of, isn't that cute? No, I think, isn't that stupid? I mean, the notion that a little knitted doll thing is actually going to solve your problem. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't help the guys in the convertible with the portaloos. Not a chance. So the notion that putting a doll under your pillow is going to help your worry, it would be laughable if it wasn't so sad. So what do we do? Well, here's a really easy answer. Don't. Yeah, okay. We know that. We know that we shouldn't worry. But what are we going to do? So the passage we read in Matthew talks about worry. It's very clear. It says, don't worry. Very clear. However, we all do it and we all know we shouldn't. So what's going to go on? What's the answer? So if you find a passage in the Bible that is more than, a verse, the reason it's more than a verse is that it's more important than what can be said in one verse. So Jesus spends quite a bit of time here, and you read through that and it's slightly repetitive. So why does Jesus repeat himself? Well, because it's important. He knows we worry and he doesn't want us to. So he sees it as important, and you may or may not have spotted it as we read it, but we'll come back to it in a second. He gives us the root cause of the worry. And it isn't because your boss is mean or because, you might fall down a well. That is not the root cause of worry. Jesus gives us the root cause. And, really, really importantly, he gives us the solution. Okay? He doesn't magically say everything will be perfect and you will have no worries. He gives us really, really clear guidance and instructions on what to do when we worry.
So here's the passage, and I've highlighted a little bit at the beginning. Jesus says, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink or your body or what you will wear. So that's, you know, pretty all-encompassing. Okay. So in, you know, Jesus' day, people would worry about that a lot because there was no social, no nothing. So, you know, life, food, drink, what you will wear, your body, pretty encompassing. He says, don't worry. But then there's a load of stuff in the middle. And then at the very end of this section, he gives us the root cause of that worry. So he's describing the process of worry. And then he says, O you of little faith. So the worry about food and clothing, it's not about whether you'll have a job tomorrow. That's not the problem, really. The problem is the last line, O you of little faith. So that is Jesus' diagnosis of the cause of worry. Now, is that good or bad? If this whole worry thing is all about faith, that's not good, is it? Because if worry is, in Jesus' mind, equated or equal to unbelief, a lack of trust in God, then that's really worrying, isn't it? Because surely having a lack of faith is worse than worrying about your dinner tomorrow. Well, yeah, it is. That's serious. But imagine this scenario. You've got stomachache, okay? Probably familiar to some of you. And the stomachache doesn't go away. You feel lousy for a day or two or three, and you don't eat much because your stomach is really bothering you. So, you've got stomachache. That's not good. So you go to the doctor, and the doctor sends you off to the hospital, and you get diagnosed with something other than stomachache called stomach cancer. Yikes, that's worse, isn't it? You thought you only had stomachache, and now you've got stomach cancer. That's really, really, really bad. So is that good news or bad news? Well, at one sense, it's really bad news, because you've got something seriously wrong with you. But what if you hadn't gone to the doctor, you stayed at home thinking, I've got stomachache, it'll go away, I'll be fine. I think it's better to know the diagnosis, because if you turn up to the hospital and they've said, oh, you've got stomach cancer, they can at least do something about that. If you'd stayed at home and just taken, I don't know, what's stomach medicine? Gaviscon. Yes, if you'd sat at home chewing those horrible Gaviscon pills, would that have cured your stomach cancer? Not a chance. Would the stomach cancer have got worse? Yes. Would you have died sooner? Probably. So the terrible news that you've got stomach cancer, not just stomach ache, although it is really, really bad news, actually, it's perversely good news because something can be done about it. So it's the same with this worry thing. Yeah, worry is bad. Is it going to go away by itself? Probably not. Is it going to make you feel good? Probably not. Will you live longer as a result? No. Is it better to know the root cause of your worry? Yes. Even though that diagnosis that actually the worry is a symptom of lack of faith, is bad news, it is better to know. Okay, so that's the position here. Jesus is talking about worry, and he gives us, if you like, the bad diagnosis, that the worry is actually caused by lack of trust, lack of faith. So at that point, that's bad news, but at least you know the problem. And then Jesus goes on to give us the solution, which is good. And the key here is that Jesus shows us how to fight for faith. So, you know, you'll hear the phrase, people battle with worry. They battle with their demons in their heads. Yeah, it is a fight. And when we worry, it is a struggle. But it's a struggle for faith that in God. Okay? So, I'm going to repeat myself here, because if you remember nothing else from today, this line is the one you need to remember here. So I've written it three times, and it's in orange. Okay? This passage is Jesus showing us how to fight the battle for faith, to deal with worry. Okay, so we've had the diagnosis that our worry is actually unbelief. And what comes next is how you deal with that. What the treatment for that bad diagnosis is, okay? And in that little passage we read, there's at least 7 promises. Okay? You don't need to count because I've done that already. So, 1. Therefore I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, what about your body or what you will wear. And here's the key. Is not life more important than food and the body more important than clothes? Well, the answer is, yeah, obviously. So, God has given us life in all its astonishing wonder. You know, forest glades and all. Okay? It's amazingly complicated. And I had to show you a picture of something complicated. So, this is cell division. You start off at the top with one cell. It turns into 2 as it goes around. And the green blobby bits are the DNA dividing, okay? So every time you have cell division, which is happening all the time in your stomach and in your bone marrow right now, this is going on a lot. And it's unbelievably complicated. You know, it's astonishing that it works. Unbelievably astonishing and complicated. And it's quite attractive art as well. So God has made that work. So he's made life, given us life, in its astonishing complexity. If he can do that, rustling up food or some clothes is a complete, you know, piece of cake. Excuse the pun. If God can make life, fixing up for you to have food and clothing is completely trivial. Therefore, why would he not do that? Now, he's done the greater thing, the hugely greater thing of making life, giving us life. Therefore, the lesser thing of maintaining it and just and arranging for food and whatnot is completely trivial to him. Okay? So he's done the hard thing. Of course he'll do the easy thing. That's 1. 2. Look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or reap or store, and yet your Heavenly Father feeds them. Are not you more valuable than they? Yes, is the answer. This is similar but different. So God cares for apparently insignificant things. I'm not saying that birds are insignificant and we shouldn't look after them, but they are nowhere near as important as us. We are far more important than little Tweety birds. God cares for them. Of course he cares for us. Okay? So he'll provide. 3. This is not quite a promise. This is kind of a statement of how things are. Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to his life? Answer, no. And it's actually worse than that. Because if you worry and you're stressed, you will actually shorten your life. So the notion that if I worry and get things all sorted out will make things make me live longer. No. Biology goes against that. Worry equals stress equals shorter life. Okay, so not only can you not add an hour to your life, you can actually shorten it by worrying. Okay, 4. And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They don't labor or spin. And yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like these. If this is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you of little faith? Okay, so I mentioned the flowers earlier. Okay, God made flowers. There are zillions of them. And as you know, I'm a completely accomplished gardener. I grew these. No, I can't grow a single flower. But, you know, this is a tiny, tiny snapshot of some of the vast array of flowers that there are out there. You know, they are astonishingly beautiful and intricate and clever and, you know, do amazing things just to get the bees to do the thing and all the rest of it. Amazingly beautiful. Again, part of that wonder of God's creation, the wonder of life. So, God has made the flowers burst with beauty. But they're, you know, they're not, again, they're not worthless, but they're only here for a day or two or three. They don't last long. You know, and if it's, as in the passage here, they're in, you know, the flowers of the meadow, which are chopped down and then chucked in the fire to make, well, you know, to dry them to make hay or just burnt to get them out of the way so they can clear the ground to grow something else. You know, they don't have lasting value. And yet we, who are in, created in God's image with eternal value and an eternal existence, you know, we are much, much more valuable, much more important than the flowers, which are, in, you know, clothed in that astonishing beauty. So we're a higher priority to God than the flowers. He will look after us. So if the flowers, how much more for us? Okay, so that's a contrast. If God does that for flowers, how much more for us? Okay, 5 and 6. So don't worry saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things. Your heavenly Father knows you need them. And then this is kind of the core of it. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and then all these things will be added to you as well. So notice here, the pagans, i.e. non-believers, and that's the clue, those who do not believe, run around chasing food and money and clothes and da-da-da-da, all the rest of it. Those who don't have faith do run around after all that stuff. But they shouldn't. God knows what we need and will provide. And the key thing, seek first his kingdom. And we'll come back to that verse in a second because that's a crucial one. Notice that the provision isn't for our comfort. It doesn't say, seek first God's kingdom and the big boat will be given to you. No? Did I read that wrong? No, all these things, the needs which come before, the things that you need, food, clothing, shelter, not the swanky swimming pool and the big house. But the seeking is the key. We'll come back to that in just a sec. Okay, so God's not ignorant of our needs. Remember, Jesus experienced hunger when he was on earth, so he knows about that. And our needs will be provided for. So the final promise in this little section. Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And elsewhere in the New and Old Testament, God has promised that we won't be tested beyond what we can bear. That doesn't mean it won't be hard. There will be hard things. I mean, Jesus is very clear about that. And the New Testament letters are very clear too. There will be testing. But it won't be beyond what we can bear, so there's no point worrying about it. And because of the Lord's great mercy, we are not consumed. His compassions never fail. They're new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. That's in the Old Testament. Okay, so back to that verse about seeking first. This is an important, really, really important concept. And there's the verse. Now, when we read the passage at the very beginning, I skipped over the very, very first word. Okay, so verse 25, it says, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, what you'll drink, etc. Okay? So that therefore ties the passage about worry to the verses that came just before. Okay? And you've heard this before, and I've probably said it a million times. If you're reading a Bible passage and you come and the section you're looking at starts with therefore, you need to ask yourself a question. What's the therefore, therefore? Okay? It's to tell you that what follows depends on the bit that came before. So you could paraphrase this loosely as Jesus saying, because of what I've just told you, don't worry. Okay, so what did he just tell us? So you have to look back to last week's sermon, which of course you all remember. Nod. Yeah, okay, so there were 3 points in it.
Okay, store up treasure in heaven, not on earth. Keep your eye pure, where your focus is, keep in the light. And you can't serve two masters, God or money.
Now, because of that, you don't need to worry. So, store up treasure in heaven, keep your eye pure, follow one master. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry.
So those two sections are inextricably linked. And if we get the therefore bit right, i.e. we store up treasure in heaven, we keep our eyes on the prize, on the ball, and we don't serve money, then we won't be worrying. Okay, so those two, they sit so close together, they're inseparable.
Okay, so all that, 7 promises about birds and flowers and creation and not worrying because you can't live longer anyway. How will things work out then?
Well, seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and he will provide.
Okay. But there's probably more, there is more to it than that. You will have heard people say, and they may have said it to you, trying to be helpful, it'll be okay. So it's a little bit like that, don't worry, be happy thing I showed you at the beginning. But there is a Bible verse that kind of gets a little bit close to that. So, have you heard this phrase? And we know that in all things God works for the good, so we don't need to worry.
Now, that's very comforting, isn't it?
But that is not the whole verse. Okay? So the notion that it'll be fine, don't worry, everything will work out fine, that is not what this verse says.
Okay, the rest of the verse says this, and we know that in all things God works for the good, that was right, for those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. It's Romans 8:28.
Okay, so this is a very well-known verse and a very widely abused verse, because we like the first bit, God will work for the good. We like that, and it's meant to be a comfort to us. It is a promise of God that he will work things out. But it's conditional. Okay, that's a puzzle. Here is something God is giving, a promise, but it's conditional. Now, most of what we hear in church about what God gives us is that he gives us with no conditions. Okay, that is absolutely true. Okay? The grace that we receive from God for salvation is utterly unconditional. I cannot do anything to make that happen. It's God's grace to me. I don't contribute to that at all. But this verse is clearly conditional. So we know that in all things, God works together for the good. And then we have the condition of those who love him. Now you can turn that around and say, God does not work for the good for those who do not love him. So there's great comfort here, but there's also a warning. That if we want God to work for our good, which we probably do, then we need to love him. And then there's actually a second qualifying clause. God works for the good for those who love him. And then a little bit more explanation, kind of in brackets almost, so it's got a comma. Those who have been called according to his purpose. So loving God and being called according to his purpose are much the same. So we need to be sure that we love God, and then this verse will be true. That he will work things for our good. Now we might not quite understand exactly how that happens. Even with hindsight, we might not understand that. But the The clue as to what that means in a little more detail comes in the next verse. So we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, those who are called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, so that he might be the firstborn among many. So here's kind of a summarized version. You just pick out the highlighted bits. God works for the good of those, then the conditional clauses, and the reason he does that is that we, might be conformed to the image of his son. So it doesn't say God works for the comfort of those who love him. Definitely doesn't say comfort. The purpose is for our good, that we are conformed to be like Christ. So that is all that bit about Romans 28. It's a bit of a digression, but because that little phrase of God working for the good is so commonly used, and I would say abused in church, I felt we had to talk about that. It is true, he does work for the good for those who love him. So the key for us is love him, which is actually what Jesus said. Seek ye first God's kingdom and God's righteousness. That's almost the same as loving God. Can't separate those two. So Jesus says it and Paul says it. Got to be right. Okay, so a few more practical things. What are we going to do when we worry? Well, reread these promises in Matthew about what God says about how to fight for faith. Remember that God looks after the birds and the flowers and all that, the stuff we just read. Remember those promises, those principles that God has laid out. They will help us fight for faith, which will stop us worrying. Okay? Here's a practical thing to do. Talk to yourself. Now, some of us might do that anyway. You don't need to nod, please. No. Okay. What do I mean by talk to ourselves? Actually, it's a very scriptural thing to do. To remind ourselves about God. What he's like, what he's done, and what our standing is before him. Okay, so the psalm we read at the beginning, Psalm 84. That's kind of an internal conversation the psalmist is having with himself. He's almost talking to himself. I would rather be a doorkeeper in my father's house. He's telling himself that. But talking to yourself to remind you what God is like. And actually the passages in Matthew we've read. Remember or consider the birds of the air. Okay, think about the birds and remember that God is like this. God cares, knows about them, and he cares about you more. So that's, again, a little internal dialogue. Consider, remember, think about these things. So thinking about what God is like will build faith and fight that lack of faith, which is the worry. So remember, our ultimate security depends on God, and therefore his character is the most precious thing we can think about. So read his promises, and I would suggest we should sing them a bit. Not kind of wandering around chanting, that's kind of slightly eccentric. And we'll come back to that in just a second, because we will do some of that. And then talk to God, i.e. pray. Now, that seems obvious, but it also is a very, very easy thing to just forget. I'm too busy worrying about whatever it is to talk to God. Well, no. Stop, talk to God, and talk to yourself about what God is like. And particularly, ask the Holy Spirit to soften our hard, unbelieving hearts, because that is where the battle really is.